to learn in here that will help us in our teaching. But first we'll go over some theory. Terry Rodnabu, did you read it?
Yes.
Did you understand it?
I understand.
Something. Okay. Now, I think I may have mentioned this in the beginning of this class, how it was actually miraculous, what we call a minor miracle, how this came about. I was trying, as you probably have noticed in looking at this book, to back up all the teaching theory that we are explaining with Shastra and quotes from Prabhupada and examples from Prabhupada. So when it came, I was sure that some teaching of learning theory was necessary for the teacher training course. But where was I going to get the Shastric examples for it? Now, I first found some information in the Bhagavatam, but that really didn't give me a clear enough idea, and I presented those quotes first. Now, I was going to, it was the day I was writing for this book, and then it was the day that I was going to start writing learning theory. And that morning, Dhanadamaraj was going to Delhi. There was some Harinam or something like that. He was going to Delhi and he had been reading this book, Chaitanya Shikshamrita by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And just as he was going out the door, he came in my room and said, "This book is so good, you should read it, especially this part." And the part that he showed me was this part on how the mind works and how the intelligence works, and it exactly explained exactly what I was looking for to do the writing of that very day. Otherwise, I've never read the book. I haven't even read it since then. I've only read this one section. Otherwise, it wasn't possible to find such an exact description of learning theory. Now, this learning theory that's presented in more or less every teacher training course in the West, I think I explained the point that it was recent. It's recently been discovered, maybe not really recently, but at least in the last 40 years. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote this, I can't remember the exact date, but in the middle or the late middle of the 19th century, how this was revealed to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I don't know. I'm going to read the very simple the paragraph, and then we'll explain it little by little. This is how one learns. Knowledge by the senses is possible for all jivas having senses. I'm reading from page 103. The knowledge of the feelings of the external world is carried by the senses through the nerves to the brain. These feelings are carried from the external world by the first faculty of the mind, which is like an inner sense. By the second faculty of the mind, these feelings are kept in memory. By the third faculty, these are united and separated, resulting in imagination and contemplation. The fourth faculty determines the quality of these feelings and minimizes their number and again divides and increases their number. By the fifth faculty, a common meaning is obtained from these assorted feelings. This is called reasoning. By means of reasoning, what work is to be done and what work is not to be done is determined. By reasoning, all mental, organic, and inorganic sciences have been discovered. That is the paragraph. I called it a simple paragraph, meaning, practically speaking, it's short. Now, there are 6 different stages in learning that are described. They're divided into 3 parts. The first part, the first one, is a faculty of the sense, or a quality or an activity of the sense, in the intro. Can you read that all right?
No.
Yes? No?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. This is the first stage. Then comes faculties of the mind, 1 through 4 of faculties of the mind. And the last faculty of the mind, we're calling that the faculty of the intelligence. As the Bhagavatam has described, this faculty as a faculty of the intelligence. I'm going to attempt to draw a picture here that may help describe it. I'm going to erase this right now. The first faculty of the senses is the actual we have senses, and they pick up the sense stimulus from the sense objects. We'll think first in terms of the eyes. Now, when the eyes are looking, what do your eyes see, Ananda?
What do my eyes see?
Yes.
Well, they're just telescopes.
Okay. Right. But how would we commonly answer that question? The eyes see the blackboard, the eyes see blue color, the eyes see the microphone, the eyes. They see so many different forms, the eyes see forms. And they identify it. I look at this, I see blue. But actually the eye isn't seeing blue. It's a very quick process how we identify what we see. But the eyes don't see blue. The eyes, as Ananda said, are just like a telescope. All they do is take in the stimulus. They take in the stimulus. Now, when the stimulus, and there are literally thousands and thousands and thousands of different elements of stimulus that are being taken in by the senses all at once. Thousands and thousands, actually millions of separate little stimuluses that are affecting our optical nerves, our hearing, the eardrums, etc. Thousands and millions of different aspects of stimulus practically bombarding us. The eyes are like telescopes. In the Bhagavad Gita, the body is compared to a city, and these are the gates to the city, taking in all kinds of stimulus. Right? That is the function of the senses that Bhaktivinoda Thakur has described. Knowledge by senses is possible for all jivas having senses. The knowledge of the feelings of the external world is carried by the senses through the nerves to the brain. Is that clear? It just carries these different stimulus.
What does that mean, all jivas having senses?
A jiva that has these 5 senses, that has a body capable of having these senses, is capable of acquiring knowledge through the senses. if the jiva does not have a body that has senses, he cannot acquire knowledge through his senses. That's all it means.
This is the way it works. So well, maybe there's jivas without senses.
Well, the senses don't have anything to do with the jiva. It has to do with the material body. So there are certainly material bodies that have that don't have senses.
The senses don't have anything to do with the jiva. Yeah.
Well, the sense, these material senses are products of the body. Adishtayam manaschayam vishya upasevate. That the based on the material mind, we accumulate senses, but they have nothing to do with us, the soul. Simple philosophical point. Now, here's where it begins to get interesting. After the first faculty of the senses, then the first function of the mind, or the first faculty of the mind, is these stimuluses, or the feelings, are carried from the external world by the first faculty of the mind, which is like an inner sense. So, the actual feeling is carried by an inner sense, which is the first faculty of the mind, which carries the actual feeling. It doesn't look like an ear, this sense. It doesn't look like the eyes, but it performs the same function as the eye, or the ear, or the sense of touch. To carry that sense stimulus from the sense object to the brain, or the mind. That is the first faculty of the mind. It is something, I was thinking of it before, I was trying to come up with a pictorial description of this process, and I was thinking of the sense stimulation coming in the body like water. The water, the different drops of water, these are drops. And this, who can tell what this is? Who has a degree in art appreciation? Yeah. Yes, but what is it? This is, what was you?
Pipe.
Yes, pipe. Pipe or straw. So it's going down here. So this entrance over here, the entrance, how the sense stimulus enters the body, these are the senses, the faculty of the senses, right? And then, these droplets of water, they come down, and this is the first faculty of the mind that carries the sense stimulation. Right? Then, by the second faculty of the mind, these feelings are kept in memory. So as the water comes out, they drop. That's pretty good, isn't it? They drop where they are kept in the second faculty of the mind. So here's the second faculty of the mind. Here's the first faculty of the mind. And there's the senses. And here's the sense stimulation up here. So what's going to happen, they're dropping into the bucket over here, right? And what's going to happen to them when they end up in this second faculty of the mind? They're going to be analyzed. So the first thing is they're held there in the mind. So whenever you analyze something, the first principle is that the mind has to be focused on the objects of the senses. If the mind, and we've all had this experience, that the sense objects of hearing, the sense stimulation of hearing enters into the ear, in say a Bhagavatam class or some other class, and our mind is not right under to catch it. Our mind is not thinking about the Bhagavatam class, focused on the Bhagavatam class, rather than the mind being over here. The mind is over here thinking about something we're going to do today, right? We're thinking about something we're going to do later, about what prasadam we're going to have, or only it's Friday and tomorrow's an off day, no classes. And we're thinking about something else, or there's bugs crawling up our leg or something like that, and we're thinking about that. And although the sense stimulation is entering the ear, we don't hear it even a little bit. Has anyone not had this experience? You're the only one. That's good. I'll sit next to you in Bhagavatam class from now on. You, practically speaking, you could not. You could be sitting there, and if your mind is on something else, you won't hear one word of the class. It's the stimulation is not going into the mind properly for its being held. That's the second faculty of the mind, and the mind has to be focusing on the sense for the actual learning to take place. Does anyone have any questions up to this point?
Yeah. It seems that even if the mind isn't focused on the hearing, hearing still enters the mind, maybe could be withdrawn with hypnosis or something. So
that's getting very very abstract. We all have the common experience that we could be somewhere. You can't stop from hearing. If you're somewhere, you'll be hearing, and your mind is somewhere else, and you haven't heard one word. You've missed it. The mind has not caught it. Yeah.
We see that, if a stronger stimulus is given, the mind is sometimes...
It can be pulled back. Right, it can be pulled back. Right. Okay, we'll talk about practical applications of how this goes to learning. But this is, first we'll learn the theory, then we'll talk some practical. By the third faculty of the mind, these are united and separated, resulting in imagination and contemplation. There's going to be three, once it's in the pot over here, it's analyzed three times. All different depths of analysis. Up to this point, the stimulation has just entered and it's being held, ready for analysis, but the mind has to be there to catch it. We also have the experience that sometimes when we're talking and eating prasadam, the cook forgot to put salt in the prasadam. But because we're talking to our friend and we're talking about something that is very interesting for us, we're eating and eating and eating, and suddenly we look and the prasadam is all gone. And you didn't notice it, it didn't have salt in it. Because the mind was not focusing, the tongue wasn't focusing on the prasadam, the ear was focusing on hearing. Practically speaking, the fact that there was too little salt didn't have any effect on us. It never went, that stimulation missed the cup and never went into the mind. I think everyone has these experiences. Now, there's three other faculties of the mind, this last one being the faculty of the intelligence. This third faculty of the mind, the preliminary, it's like a reaction to the stimulus. And this is these are very heavy levels of reaction to stimulus. Say if once you were walking along at night, it was dark at night, and you open your door, and you open the door, and suddenly, oh, snake! And there was a real snake there. That terror would enter your heart, and you'd be so frightened. Then, another day, when you're walking out,
And if there was a rope there, you'd walk out and go, In the same way, there's a preliminary analysis of the sensual stimulus. Or sometimes we're going to walk across the street and we just get the slightest glimpse that a car is coming or something, and immediately we jump back.
There's a preliminary analysis, very, very, very basic.
All these three, there will be some analysis, each one increasing in complexity, and they are all based on experience. A person who has never experienced the snake, when he opens the door, when he walks outside, he sees a rope. He doesn't have that previous experience that makes him react in a very strong way. But it's this third faculty of the mind, third faculty of the mind, is a very basic reaction to the stimulus. Preliminary reaction. Almost, it's so fast, practically speaking, it's meant to save your life.
Just like I read in a book when I was teaching Gurukula in Gita Nagari, that one way you can identify a poisonous snake from a non-poisonous snake is the shape of the eye, the pupils of the eye. A poisonous snake, I think, has an eye inside the eye shaped like that, and a non-poisonous snake has the eyeball shaped like that. So imagine if there's a poisonous snake there and you have to look in his eye to figure out if he's... See, that is a very high level of analysis. But immediately, no one ever thinks of doing anything like that. As soon as you see the snake, no question of any intellectual analysis. This third level of the mind works on that. Or hunger.
Reactionary?
It's a very primitive, uncomplicated reaction to things. That's the third faculty of the mind. Now, up to this point, see, if you look on page 104, right at the beginning of the paragraph below the four asterisks, there, in the third faculty of the mind, the information reacts in a simple way with the information already within one's memory. That is the third faculty of the mind, in a very simple way. It is good. It is bad. It is dangerous. It is fearful. It is tasty. It may be poisonous. Good, bad. Very, very simple reactions within the memory. So these are three types of analysis going on while it's being held, the stimulus is being held in the second faculty of the mind. So all this time, while these three different analyses are going on, the mind has to keep focused. Now, the fourth faculty of the mind is, it's very interesting. It's like, up to this point, the stimulus has not yet been identified. Just like right now I'm seeing blue over there on the wall. So already we're up to the fourth faculty of the mind. There's an identification of the stimulus. Now, how does the mind work? In our memory, based on intelligence, there are so many different categories. This is blue, this is green, this is not blue. This is yellow, this is spinning. There are so many conceptual categories that we've built up somehow or another. This is glass, this is clear, this is metal, this is outside, this is inside, this is cloth, this is
This is stone. This is chalk. This is black. This is dirty. All these different conceptions, right? We have unlimited, practically speaking, unlimited conceptions, concepts in our mind. Right? So in this faculty over here, the fourth faculty, this is the third one is preliminary and very simple and basic. The fourth faculty, we're getting into more more deeper analysis. And the way it is done is as if, while it's being looked at here, so quickly cards are being held up. Is this blue? Is this red? Is this wonderful? Is it frightening? And these comparisons are being made, and all the mind does, the mind in this stage, or this part of the intelligence, accepts and rejects. Accepts, rejects. Accepts, rejects. Accepts, rejects. So this is, so if this is water, so many different cards of concepts are being held up to this. So if one conceptual card is clear, will that be accepted or rejected by the mind? If it's good water, it'll be accepted. This is clear. If it is tasty, the concept of tasty that we have in our mind, will that be accepted if this is water or rejected? Accepted. The concept of black, will that be accepted or rejected?
Rejected.
The concept of bird, will that be accepted or rejected? The concept of petrol, will that be accepted or rejected? The concept of man, when you look at the water. So even though it sounds silly, you know, the concept of man, the concept of chair, the concept of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement, all these unlimited concepts that we have in our mind. And not each one, but we go through some analysis like this, cards being held up. Now it's very interesting, in the Bhagavatam, there is a story of Usha and Aniruddha. Now Usha, who was Usha's mother? Who was Usha's father? Banasura. Who was her friend? Anyone remember? Chitraleka. Now Chitraleka had a dream, Usha had a dream of Krishna's grandson named Aniruddha. And she wanted to identify Aniruddha. Right? So Chitraleka took what? Chitra means what?
Picture.
So she took up just in the same way that the mind puts these conceptual pictures. This is the job of the fourth level. All these different concepts held up one picture after another picture after another picture after another picture until she identified the right picture. Now who is Aniruddha?
The deity of mind.
Yes. How the Bhagavatam has written this, I don't know. So subtle. My analysis is that the Bhagavatam is unlimited. It's unlimited. Somehow or another, we've discovered this one little teeny, almost insignificant little point in the Bhagavatam. But there is unlimited little aspects of the Bhagavatam that can be revealed. Aniruddha is the deity of the mind. So this is the exact function of the mind. The showing of one concept after another concept after another concept after another concept until the acceptance comes. And when that acceptance comes, then through accepting and rejecting of the mind according to its desires, this is good, this is bad, this and that, the information is lessened by combining it. Oh, this is okay. We're up. That's going to the fourth faculty.
Thus the information reacts in a simple way with the information of the mind. Then, through the accepting and rejecting of the mind according to its desires, the information is lessened by combining it and joining it to known concepts, and increased by dividing it into its constituent conceptual parts, the fourth faculty of the mind. That's the job of the fourth faculty of the mind. So remember, there's billions of stimulus that are entering in, and they are summed up. All those stimulus are summed up in one concept. So in this way, they're lessened. And then the lessening is broken up into smaller constituents. So this is a peacock, but here's the peacock's feathers, here's the peacock's beak, it flies. So once it's identified, it's broadened also into constituent conceptions. So as soon as you know it's water, after you analyze it in this fourth faculty and understand that it's water, so many other concepts automatically will come too. It's tasty, it's clear, it's good for you, I should drink some. So many other concepts will also automatically come. And in that way, the stimulus is lessened into one thing and it's divided into many. And in this stage, the fourth faculty of the mind, the thing is actually identified. Yeah.
Sorry, I missed that point. How did you say it was connected with the aniruddha?
Which point? Where?
You're saying mind.
Well, this is the function of the mind, this accepting, rejecting. See, all the different concepts are brought forward before the mind. Mm-hmm. Like pictures.
Right.
And they're either accepted or rejected. And that's exactly what Chittaleka is doing with Usha. To identify Aniruddha, the mind. Okay. So now, in the fourth faculty of the mind, did you have a question? Or?
How on the third level is it possible to have a preliminary reaction without a definite identification? I mean, I understand the analogy of the
it's reactive. It's reactive. See, just like, there's actually a rasika way to explain this too. The difference between an anubhav and a sattvic abhav in rasa shastra. One, the sattvic abhav, the gopis will hear the sound of Krishna's flute, and without going through any intellectual processes, they're stunned and maybe they faint, something like that. There's no intellectual process. And then an anubhav is a different type of reaction that goes through that goes through the consciousness more. So when we see a snake, we see a rope, we don't first analyze it. There's a natural reaction. Or just like if you ever, I had once the glorious experiences when I was heating up some water with an electric water heater in Vrindavan. And I wanted to see how hot the water was. So I took my finger and I put it in the water and wah! Because 220 volts of electricity went through my body. For 5 years after that, whenever I would see the water with electricity, even to this day, it probably happened 6 or 7 years ago, whenever I see that situation, I have a reaction to it. The stimulation comes into my mind, I see it, right? And before there's any intellectual reasoning, there is a reaction on this third level, very simple reaction, no.
No.
So it doesn't go through the intelligence. It's a very basic level of the mind.
But her point was that the basic identification something already there is
Well, it's reacting with previous experience, things that are already there, but it doesn't go through it's not a very conscious process. Like this other one, the fourth one is much more conscious. This is very basic. They all happen each time.
I was imagining the fourth process was to see the red chalkboard eraser. So my mind seemed to be saying, is thinking very rapidly the things that could be.
That's what happens.
Finally, it comes. I really just talk with the research. Yes. Maybe if I read something about it. And that doesn't seem to be conscious.
But none of this is very conscious, unless one's very conscious of how one's mind is working.
So the her point I thought was, what is the difference between that and...
I'm telling you that there's, in this third one over here, not everything reacts like that, but have you ever seen a snake like that, or a tiger? There's a raw reaction to certain things. If you have, just like... there's the famous experiment, Pavlov's experiments on dogs. So he's on this third level with no... He's connected the ringing of a bell to food. He's made a connection, a mental connection on this third level. So therefore when the bell is rung, the dog salivates. So it's the same type of principle. It's like a conditioned reflex, it's called in psychological terms. So this is the level of conditioned reflexes. Or someone who's young, who's very young, his father died. So he's Catholic and he goes to the church and he sees a priest all dressed in black. The child is just 2 years old or 3 years old. So very often, this connection of the trauma of the death of the father will become connected to the priest or something like that. And then what happens, every time you see a priest, you have a reaction and you don't understand why, for instance.
Another way of explaining could be that there will be a certain reactions that are meant to protect. It's like if something gets too close to the eyes, then automatically shut.
That's on the physical level, and that's a bit different. Right, but it's still on, it's just physical. It doesn't have anything to do with the mind, and that's controlled by demigods and this and that. Yes.
The third faculty results in imagination and contemplation. So, would you say that dreams are the third faculty?
No, that's completely different than this. See, you're imagining. It's something. You're contemplating. It's a very basic reaction. I think we should go on. I think everyone pretty much understands that, you know, now people are working on the fifth faculty of the mind on this information and seeing how that's beginning to reason with it and seeing how it works and is it really true and this and that. That's the fifth faculty of the mind already. So let's go on to the fifth faculty of the mind. Now you're up to the level of intelligence. After the information has, this is on 104, has undergone this preliminary conceptual analysis and it's been identified, it is again analyzed for meaning and stored in a deeper form within the memory for practical and theoretical reasoning. This is what we will call the intelligence. So now you understand it's poison, so then you start thinking, how am I going to get rid of it? You see, it's a rope, not a snake, and you start thinking, boy, wasn't I silly for getting frightened? There was no reason to get frightened. You begin to reason. This is what we usually call intelligence or reasoning. Or how can I remove the rope from there? It's going to frighten so many other people. How can I remove the snake from there? It's going to bite so many people. Let me show my friend about it. You start using the information. Now, I'm going to erase this illustrious drawing over here. This little picture's over here actually go in the fourth faculty of the mind. Now, we're going to discuss how this fifth faculty works and how the intelligence is organized. Now, no one really knows how the intelligence is organized except that Krishna somehow or another supplies everything. The remembrance and forgetfulness. Yet, there is some way that the intelligence is organized and we can get a glimpse of it. Now, let's take an example that I think I used here of the morning program. Now, when I say morning program, none of you were thinking of the morning program when I said it. But what do you think of when I say morning program?
Vyasa-san.
Vyasa-san. Okay, what do you think of next?
Speak.
Okay, so this is morning program. So one Vyasa-san, then another thing connected to that speaker, with speaker one who was speaking about Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah. What else next?
Temple.
Okay, in the temple. Another element, huh?
Deities.
The deities. Okay, now we're moving from morning program. We could continue just going things that are directly connected to the morning program, but also there are things just connected to the temple. So we're going to move in this direction of the deities. The deities, then you can think of Krishna Balaram, so many things with deities and the deities in England, like that. And then, okay, now we're in England, over here. So there's different branches of these informations that are all connected, like an index of a book. They're all cross-referenced and connected. Now, if you think of home, what do you... I'm looking for the right person for this one. I have to find the right person. There's no one here. I may work on this one. What do you think of home when you say home? Country.
My child.
Huh?
My daughter.
Okay. Okay, so that... Okay, connected to home, there's so many things. Someone may... Does anyone think of England when we say home? Is anyone... All you British citizens, disloyal, don't think of... Okay, so you came to England. Say, this is England over here. You thought of England, right? Because of the deities, right? So you came to England through deities. But you might also go through home. Someone may go through home, or someone may go through thinking of American history. You end up at some point, you'll end up in England. So all these different points, they're connected to so many other points. It's such an amazing, miraculous thing, and you can follow any one of these lines and get to so many different places. So this is very intricate, how it's working. Now, no one knows how it works, really. But this is to give us some quick representation that when we say England or we say deities, we immediately think of Radha Shyam, we think of Radha Vandaneshwar, we think of Krishna Balaram, we think of Vrinda Devi, we think of in St. Kate, who knows the deity in St. Kate? Huh?
You don't know what St. Kate is, Baba?
99.9 of your life is wasted. But I'll tell you. St. Kate is where Radha and Krishna used to meet, one of their meeting places. And that is a deity of Yogamaya there, who is Purnamasi. Practically the only deity of Purnamasi in Vrindavan. Anyway, we have redeemed you. St. Kate Devi. Huh? Anyway, get out. Start walking. So the mind is so amazingly organized in this way. And the trick is, this is learning theory. As soon as you think of one place, it's connected to so many other things and you can reason. If it's a snake, you may think of so many different snakes, or if it's a rope, or it's connected, or this snake story, or this thing happened to this person with rope. And at this point, when you have in the examination, all these different experiences are being called in. Now often, when our intelligence is being called in like that, we can't... The information is there in our mind, but we can't get to it. We can't find it. So, one of the keys in learning, and we'll be talking about this just in a moment, is when new information is put in, it should be connected to something you already know. Somehow or another connected. And we'll be discussing practical uses of the theory that we have just described right now. We'll talk about that in the next 2 days. We'll give a few practical explanations right now. Now, These five stages are the kind of thing that Grishan asks on tests. You should know that by now.
Let's take some questions on this, on Bhaktivinoda Thakur's analysis of how, as how any jiva soul who has senses gets knowledge through the senses. Yes.
Could you define just in three words define the fifth function?
The fifth function using simple words. Okay. After the information has undergone this preliminary conceptual analysis, as identified, it is again analyzed for deeper meaning and stored within and stored in a deeper form within the memory for practical and theoretical reasoning. That's how I would define it. In other words, you understand it deeply. You don't only understand it's a peacock, but you understand so many deep things about a peacock. It's connected to Krishna's Leela. Krishna danced. Krishna and Srimati Radharani both dance like peacocks. You may understand if you have, depending upon how much knowledge you have, what type of a bird it is, you may think of Darwin's theory and how Darwin, when he saw the peacock, he was amazed and he said, "This ruins my entire theory of evolution, and peacocks can kill cobras." You might have so much information that's immediately brought out after this fourth analysis is complete, and you know it's a peacock, and then you start reasoning with all this information. That's the fifth faculty of the mind. Deeper analysis and reasoning. Yeah, if I go over. Yeah. Me, I mean you. Well, I'll come to that again. I think I jumped a little too much there.
Does this fifth faculty of deeper analysis, does it come to a stage of conclusion also?
It can, why not? But sometimes when we analyze, we don't come to a conclusion. But still we're using that faculty for analysis.
Does the spirit faculty also exhaust the memory, or
the memory is unlimited, practically. I mean, how many bits of information do we have in here now? We have unlimited, practically speaking.
So does it mean it's continuous with Paramatma?
It's certainly Paramatma is allowing it to go on, at least that. Exactly how he interacts with the whole system. We know it's dependent on him. No one can understand this deeply, so we say Paramatma.
What stage does he depend on?
He's, all of it is dependent on him. Nothing works without him. The whole material nature is working under him. Daivyesha gunamayi mamamayi. This gunamayi is coming from Paramatma. It's all dependent on Paramatma. Everything is, there's two elements of this Maya Shakti. One is the ingredients, Upadan, and Nimitta, and the actual doer. So the three modes of material nature are Nimitta, and the and Bhumirapo Nalayu, that's Upadan. So they're both coming from Paramatma. So everything is dependent on him, and he is the controller. You ready? Okay, we'll come back and then.
You just said memory is unlimited. So how come? Well, when I think of memory as being limited, I mean, then I figure, well, we can always learn. Because how come when we get when body's age, can't learn anymore? You can't learn very much.
But there are limitations in that way.
Can you explain why?
No. Because why? Some people don't say that, by the way. See, I would tend to say it's what Prabhupada said too, that memory is a cultivation. Young people who are lazy also can't learn. So when you get lazy, you don't learn and you don't memorize things. And if you keep cultivating in your memory, then it will grow and grow and grow. Prabhupada said, memory is a cultivation. Yeah.
So then, can at any point in this state of reasoning, if that Rikuna takes a fraction of a moment, Patrick speaking, complete it all the way through?
It may not. This last stage, sometimes we think about a problem and reason about it for days and days and days and days, and then suddenly by Krishna's mercy, boom, pop, the light bulb goes on and we understand it.
But my question is, at any point along that line, even before number five, can it be committed to memory as
these
a point? Like if it's just that, you know, like the example you gave, I see a snake, you jump. So without any more further reasoning or anything, you just leave that, and that's in your memory that you saw a snake at that point. And then
later on, you'll start reasoning about that. But your first reaction has nothing.
To memory at that point.
It's committed to one level of memory. But it's not, maybe it won't be committed to all levels of memory. These are different levels of the memory and intelligence.
So it's not required to go through all the steps in order to be...
To act? To what?
It's not required to go through all the steps to the point of number five to be categorized and stored away in the mind.
No. And in fact, these very basic ones on three are very deeply, deeply, heavily there, and you might not even be conscious of them.
Yeah, when we come to a reasoning, would it also be that we're getting information that is stored in our mind from previous life?
When you come to which?
To a reasoning on a subject, right? And can this information be coming from the
Well, definitely there's tendencies from previous lives, but exactly, that's really coming by the grace of Paramatma. But our whole situation now is dependent on previous karma. Adishtaya manishtayam vishya upasevate. It's all dependent on Paramatma, based around the mind. Yeah, I'll show you.
What is the function of brain?
The brain. That one you can ask Rasaraj or Sataputta, the connection between the brain and the mind.
Like you were once asking, you said it's just like a junction box.
The brain. So why are you asking me? I don't know anything. It's just like a junction box. But a junction box between the subtle and gross elements. Brain, after all, is composed of bhumi, rapo, nayu, vayu. But the mind is subtle, much more subtle. But the mind also is not limited to the brain. You can put your mind down into your toe. Yogis know how to do that. They know how to move their mind from any part of their body to some other part of their body. Here, you want to move your mind to your ear? Everyone be very quiet and don't say anything. Just listen. Now, all that was going on before, but no one was aware of it because the mind wasn't focused on it. Listen to the birds. They're harder because of the kids. But listen to the birds. You can always hear birds in Vrindavan. Parrots. Always gossiping. Okay, I think last two questions, and then we'll go on.
You say fifth faculty is reasoning and deeper analysis.
Huh.
So is number four, deeper analysis. So it's different.
One is deeper.
The other is deeper.
Yeah. I mean, it's all relative. It's deeper analysis than the one before it, but not as deep as the one after it.
Right.
It's an identification.
So if you ask us in the test, how are we going to save you?
Baba, don't worry about the test. That's easy for me to say, I know. Okay, anyway, if you say deeper, and then you say deepest.
All right.
Okay? Superlative.
So in Jiva and in animal spotting, how many of these processes go on?
Well, they probably go on... I can't say really authoritatively, but to some degree they all go on. Like you take a small little bug and you put a needle near him or something like that, he may run. But he probably, I don't really know how they work very well, those little bugs. All I know is I have a lot of ants in my room. Obviously, they don't have very much reasoning power, except Prabhupada said that even a tree has intelligence. Because there's a knot in the bark, and he's growing around the knot in the bark. So he said, even a tree has intelligence. He's putting his roots down to look for water. That's intelligence. He's going in the direction of water. So they have some intelligence, but not as much as most humans. Well, ultimately we can say it's Krishna, because Krishna said aponam cha, it's coming from him. But for the purpose of this analysis, some memory, some not being able to remember something, it often comes from not being able to locate it, not having the index point, as you're saying. That's right, that happens so many times. That's why everyone likes multiple choice tests, because it gives you 5 different index points to search for. Clues, we'll talk about this after. It gives you clues. And sometimes we have the feeling that some fact is at the tip of our tongue, we say. Yeah? And so, or sometimes you're giving a class and you're thinking of a sloka and you say, what is the first word? So once you pull the first word, that connects you with all the other words. But until you get that first word, you don't have access to the sloka. It has to be very well organized. Now, we'll talk about it more. Some of these questions that we're getting to now, we'll talk about later, so why don't we move on. Now, here's some simple examples of why people don't learn. On page 105, we've mentioned one and two. One is wandering mind. So when one's mind is wandering, the information isn't pouring down into the cup for analysis. And therefore, you don't learn anything. The information's going in, but it's not being held. So therefore, especially when we're young, if we can learn how to control our mind, this is the greatest and most valuable thing. And on the other hand, learning, becoming attracted to sense gratification, which agitates the mind, and that's why Kali Yuga is so difficult, because everyone's mind is agitated. Prena payusha kalavasmin yugejan mandasamanda mateo manda bhagya upadrutaha. That above all, the symptom of Kali Yuga is everyone's mind is agitated. Why is it agitated? By so much sense gratification. So therefore, Prabhupada said, to give a child sense gratification at an early age, in other words, to agitate his mind and senses. If you agitate the senses, it agitates the mind. To give a child sense gratification at an early age where he is satisfied anyway is the greatest violence. Because then their mind becomes disturbed. And once the mind is disturbed and agitated for sense gratification, most of us have the experience of how hard it is to focus that mind again. Once the mind is agitated, so hard to focus it. So a child who is soft and pliable, to put in that soft clay all these desires for sense gratification and thus agitate his mind is violence, the greatest violence, because they cannot hear anymore. They cannot live simply anymore. So therefore, when our mind is wandering, there's no question of the information making it to our intelligence, the fifth faculty of the mind for analysis. So therefore, we spent time in lecture, when we're talking about lecturing and instructing about liveliness, because we wanted to teach techniques to help the students concentrate. Because it's hard to focus the mind, so if the teacher can do things to help the students focus their mind, he is really helping them. That's why we spent time on liveliness, because unless the attention is there, the mind is focused on hearing, there's no question of learning anything. The second one is lack of prerequisite knowledge. We gave that little drawing over here of the way that the intelligence works, this representational drawing, to make this point, and we'll use this point again, that information is all connected. So if I say the first word of the verse, naturally the second, Deheno Smin. And if I said what is the fourth word, everyone will have to go Deheno Smin Yata Dehe. You have to find the third word to get the fourth word, because it's all connected. You pull one and you get the next one. So information in the memory is connected to other information. So one of the keys of good learning is that you connect one thing to another. But I made a little mistake here. I missed a point. That this point specifically talks about prerequisite knowledge. That you have, when you're teaching something, you have to connect it to something else. So if you're teaching, trying it to connect it to something that the person doesn't have, just like in the early years of the movement, practically speaking, no one ever possibly could memorize a Sanskrit sloka. Isn't that, Maharaj? No one could do it. It was like beyond everyone. Now, no, it was amazing. Because all the words sounded so foreign. There was nothing familiar to connect it to in the consciousness. Or if I start speaking if Nitai Gore starts explaining something about you know how to program in COBOL, Fortran, C, mostly C. So if he starts speaking C language, who doesn't know anything about computers here? Raise your hand if you don't know anything about computers. So when someone starts talking about being online and their modem isn't working, and the hard drive, and this bit, and that byte. Nothing makes any sense, because you don't have the prerequisite knowledge to connect it to. Now, that was, for Nittai, that was just, that's not even ABC stuff, the things I just mentioned. How's your CPU, by the way, Sundarananda? None of it makes any sense if you don't have this prerequisite knowledge. And you can't remember any of it. What were those words I said? It's so hard to remember most of them because there's no prerequisite knowledge to attach things to. So whenever you teach something, you have to make sure that the prerequisite knowledge is already learned. Or else it will not stick when you teach it. Therefore, analogies and examples are very important. We'll go over this more in detail later on too. Now, just a few more points. This is a lot. You've all been very patient, and I'm actually so impressed with how well you're all listening to this very technical subject matter. Social closure. Another point about the importance of this type of knowledge. Now, the senses themselves have some memory, and the mind in the bottle itself has some memory when the information is in there. Very often, if a person starts speaking very fast and he's talking very important concepts that are very difficult to understand, it's very hard to follow how one concept is going to the next concept. It's really hard to listen and pay attention because just as soon as you're trying to understand what he says one time, it's past you, especially if English isn't your mother tongue. It's so difficult because it's all going in your ears and it takes you time to analyze it in the mind, and then it's knocked out of the mind by the next stimulation, and it's so hard to understand in that way. What to speak of trying to understand deep philosophical points and deeply understand those philosophical points if someone is speaking too fast. So... So the mind, especially when you're talking philosophy, we brought up this point of the importance of silence and pausing. Well, here's the reasons. The mind, that bottle or flask, needs time for these, especially that fifth analysis is dependent on the fourth and the third analysis. So that takes time. Even though the mind works so fast, and the intelligent works so fast, but there's so much unlimited information and options to go through that it takes time to ponder things deeply. So therefore, one should, for that reason, especially when speaking philosophy, speak slowly. Otherwise, these analyses will not go on properly. And although you may be speaking very nicely, it will not be remembered because it won't be analyzed thoroughly enough to attach it properly in the right places in the intelligence. I think that's enough. Okay. I should summarize here, but I don't have the energy, so I'm going to do it. Use a teacher trick. Let's summarize this now. What is the first faculty of the senses? What if it start with the five faculties or the six different levels of this processing? What's the first one?
Senses.
Okay, second one. Okay, so you have to wait because see, different people take different amounts of time. Now, if I would have just called on the first person, I could have done that. But if I, by waiting to 3 or 4 seconds, so many more people thought about it, and that's even a review for themselves. So it helps so much after you ask a question, you wait 3 or 4 seconds. Okay. The second one, which is the first faculty of the mind.
Kundu. In a sense, it's realized.
I'm sorry.
The
inner sense. And practically speaking, you can, and it's interesting, we'll talk about this later though, but these feelings, smells, are stored in the mind. Sometimes I'll be walking somewhere, anywhere in the world, and I'll smell a chapati being made, and it'll immediately bring me back to my first days as a devotee. There was a special smell of fresh chapatis being made that immediately opens up these doors and connects. So the inner sense, first faculty of the mind, second faculty of the mind. Receives the stimulus, right. Think of it, I think the easiest way to understand this one is the picture. The first faculty of the mind is the pipe. The second one is the jug. It's holding it. Otherwise, unless it's held there, how can the analysis take place? Then there are three levels of analysis. What's the first one, which is the third faculty of the mind? I'm looking for an answer. Yeah. Mataji? It's a very... Yes, it's all the mind does is accept and reject. Mahari? a basic preliminary reaction, as you pointed out before, almost on the survival level, good or bad, very, very basic concepts. Fourth faculty of the mind. What's your name again? Sitaram. Identifies it, and it compresses all the stimulus into one conceptual identification, and then breaks it up into so many different component conceptual realizations. And the final faculty of the mind?
Analysis,
reason, practical application, like that. We won't require, even on the test, more than that. Now these, if you understand these, it will help your teaching and your presentations greatly. For the next two classes, we're going to go over some very practical teaching tips using this theory. Read 108 to 118. 108 to 118, it'll take us 2 days to go over it. Oh, tomorrow's the test, isn't it? Yeah. We'll have the 2 days on Thursday and Friday. I wrote the test. How many questions did the last test have? Now you have to analyze. See, just watch how your mind worked. How many questions? What do you have to remember before you can remember this? How many questions did the last test have? Devaki? 12? 13. Right. This test only has, I think, 8. So it's much easier already. Huh?
The questions count more? There's more points, they're categorized. There are 13 questions, you might have to go to certain.
Only on discussion. On Monday we'll have the test on learning theory, and that will be the final test. Only on learning theory will be the test on Monday. On discussion and questions, but not that I didn't ask you to read the analysis of questions, so I'm not going to be requiring that for the test. From 90 to 100 is not required for the test. Has anyone read that? Very interesting. Very interesting. Nitai. Quiet, please, please, please.
So we have this recovery page 16 to 88.
I'll look in my index here, my table of contents. To 88. Is it 89? Or 89. 89 from 60 to 89. Any questions? Now, tomorrow, 40 minutes. There's a few different programs going on. Tomorrow is the first day of Kartik. It's Purnima, Sarad Purnim. Many devotees will be walking around Govardhan late at night in the full moon night. Very glorious. Many devotees will be here for the Damodar prayers. And many devotees will be going to Rupa Sanatan Math, Gaudiya Math for a festival with Narayan Raj and the devotees there. There was usually every year we go from Vishwarupa Mahotsav, and we share some common festivals with Narayan Raj and his Math. And this year the Vishwarupa Mahotsav festival was cancelled because Maharaj had gone out of station to Haridwar. So he's invited us to come this time to glorify as he said to me, the speciality of our Guru Parampara. the very special and unique flavor of our Guru Parampara. So we'll glorify Srila Prabhupada in this way and Guru Parampara. So that's it. So for 5:30, if you get there at 5:30 to 6 o'clock, it's okay. Our test starts at 10 after. I think there won't be any trouble. Devotees finishing by 5. But then again, I was wrong last time. But this time, I tried to make it easier. Also, we're going to need devotees to mark it also. Oh, Mahari Prabhu, could you give your 2-minute presentation before the test. So everyone come on time. A very enlivening and instructional presentation about taking tests. Not now. You think about it. You have to use all the rules of instructing. Okay? Okay. Any other questions? Yeah, Dave.
Is it possible to have the question titled test sheet for our students?
Yeah. Didn't we do that last time?
No,
not in this class. That was a different class. I gave them out. That was Bhagavad Gita. So, but in any case, the answer is yes, it is possible. It's sometimes possible things are very unlikely. But in this case, it'll be typed out for you to make it easier. Any other questions? I would like everyone to take the remaining 7 or 8 minutes to write. This will help you write down what you remember about the class, what you learned about teaching, etc. You heard, you sat very peacefully, mostly peacefully, for over an hour and listened to a lecture. I want to commend you for doing this.